Good afternoon, everyone. I think we'll make a start on our meeting. So I'll just start off with the introductory remarks. I'd like to welcome everyone to the meeting today. Can everyone hear me clearly? Yeah. Members of the public should remain seated throughout the meeting and should not speak. Everyone should ensure their mobile telephones are either turned off or switched to silent. The use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio recorded, except where the Council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. I would remind councillors of their obligations under the Councillors' Code of Conduct to clear any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the meeting today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the table for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. Okay, members, thanks for that. And first item on our agenda then is apologies. Members, any apologies from members?
We have Councillor Devlin and Councillor Mernon and Councillor Casey.
Yeah. Okay, so that's all the apologies.
Chair, just to let you know formally, I have to leave at 3 o'clock, Chair.
Right. Okay, thanks for that, Councillor Tinley. Just under Chairperson's remarks is to welcome Councillor Clark. I think this is your first meeting, Councillor Clark. Yes, yeah, so you're very welcome. And you're taking over from Councillor Hardick? Yeah. Thank you. You're very welcome. And then item 2, declarations of interest. Have we got any declarations of interest? No. Christine?
Chair, I'd like to declare an interest at item 16.
Okay, thanks for that. And I will declare an interest in item 17, and I will leave the meeting at that point, and I will ask then for an acting chairperson to be appointed just to take that last item. Okay, thank you. Next item, members, is the action sheet. And just quickly running down the action sheet, the first action, which is a status report on the grants database to be brought back to committee. Now, that's we've got the progress to date against that, and could some of the officers give us an update as to where that is and when we can expect that report to the Audit Committee, please?
Okay, so the programmes unit have got approval from the IT Working Group to buy a grant database, but currently they have a consultant in who they procured to draft up a financial assistance policy. So the consultant's in on the ground now and has met with a number of different departments developing the policy. The policy is hoped to go through committee in December 18 this year. So as soon as the policy is approved and through committee, this is going to form the basis of the grants database. So hopefully the grants database will be in operation for the new financial year. And we'll bring back a report in January to say what they're going to do with the database.
Okay, members, thanks for that, Chair. And then really the outstanding issues from the 26th of April. The first one there, which is the management of risk, and that was to bring a conflict of interest policy to a future Audit Committee meeting, and that is on the agenda today. And then really the only other one that we used to bring members' attention to is the training for members. If officers could give us an update as to when that training will take place, please.
So we brought a paper to the last Audit Committee in July, so the training is going to be split into 4 sections, and it's going to be carried out to the next Audit Committee in January. So we have to get a date in the diary, and it's just that NIO is going to present some, and Christine from Internal Audit, and hopefully CIFA as well. So it's just getting dates in the diary, but it'll be before the next Audit Committee.
Okay, thanks for that, Jared. And I just think, Jared, if you can share that date as early as possible and as future, you know, give plenty of notice, so that would allow members, you know, to be able to attend. Thank you. And then really, members, Sorry, Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, just on the training chair, the internal training. I had attended the training in the care house, which was excellent. And we had a report at the end from Rodney. And I think if we're going to through training internally, I think it would be a good idea that the publications that Rodney had brought, which is the Board Effectiveness Good Practice Guide, is given to all members, because it makes everything concise and outlines our role. I think it's an excellent publication. So if we can pass the word out to them, publications can be handed out at the internal training. I think it would be a really good exercise.
Thanks for that, Councillor Byrne. Okay. And members, then, really, the remaining actions from the 5th of July Audit Committee meeting are all noted. We've got responses there, and they're all proposed to remove from the action sheet. So, are members happy to remove all the remaining actions? Could I have a proposal and second for that, please? Councillor Mulgrew and Councillor Byrne, second. Thank you. So, members, that's the action list. So, can I have a proposer and seconder now to move into closed session? Proposed, Councillor Mulgrew, and second, Councillor. Serena, do you want to maybe just take us through the decisions that have been taken?
Okay. Whilst in closed session, the following items were considered. Item 4, ASM Progress Summary Report. It was agreed to note the contents of the ASM Progress Summary Report. Item 5, Internal Audit Plan 2018-19. It was agreed on the proposal of Councillor Rowan, seconded by Councillor Byrne, to approve the revised Internal Audit Plan 2018-19, including the use of the contingency days noted. Item 6, the Northern Ireland Audit Office report to those charged with governance. It was agreed on the proposal of Councillor Byrne, seconded by Councillor Rowan, to note the contents of the NIAO report to those charged with governance, and to further note that the Audit Committee accepted management's reasons for not adjusting the unadjusted misstatements identified in the report. Item 7, Statement of Accounts 2017-18. It was agreed in the proposal of Councillor Byrne, seconded by Councillor Rowan, to note the status of the audit of the 2017-18 Statement of Accounts and approve the audit accounts, including the annual government statement, for signature by the Chief Executive and Chairperson of Council.
Okay, thanks for that, Serena. So, members, we're now back in open session, and the next item is item 8, and this is the corporate risk register.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Members, representing to you today the quarterly presentation of the corporate risk register. You will note at item 2 that we have a number of changes to that register since last presented to you, and that's, as you'd expect, it is a live and moving document. We have a new risk identified, corporate risk 12, which relates specifically to the risk of a industrial action. This has been a risk carried at the Corporate Services Directorate Risk Register, but has been escalated due to recent events with trade unions. We have a second new risk in relation to corporate risk 13, and again, this has been influenced by, we've seen some devastating effects recently of fire, and we have heightened this risk because we are doing some fire risk assessments currently, and we have some actions to take as a council. We will also note at corporate risk 8, it was discussed at the last audit committee, and we were requested by the audit committee to break those actions down, that they were maybe somewhat overarching, so hopefully you'll see that we have done that, and again you'll see the actions are really in respect of the IT transformation project. And as before then, you will also see there are some minor changes and updates to the actions identified, and the comment notes will be updated where appropriate as well. So happy to take any comments, any questions, members, and we're asking you to note the corporate risk register today.
Okay, members, any questions, comments? Councillor Byrne?
Yeah, just on the process, Chair, and it's just a bit of naivety because I'm only new on the committee. Seeing the summary on the front sheet, so I can take it from that, even though I went through the risks one by one, that the scoring hasn't changed on any of the risks that's in there. And if it does in future meetings, for example, corporate risk 6, failure to provide timely planning decisions, we're all aware that there's changes afoot for the planning and the way, you know, the way it's with the, I don't want to say briefing panel, but because it's not a briefing panel, but if that comes in, then that's going to affect the scoring there. I'm asking, is it going to be summarising the funds so that we're constantly not going back to these matrices and comparing them with the previous months or the previous quarter? So it's just the process, because I'm a bit naive to it.
Yes, Councillor, where we change the score, we highlight that to you, so we'll do that going forward. At one stage, I think one of the members of this committee had asked for us to try and do a track changes version. It becomes too messy to do that, so what we'll do is we highlight any of the key changes. So any change to the risk ratings, we'll highlight that on our summary sheet. Yes.
Yeah. Trina, could I ask as well, it might be useful to look at some kind of summary cover, you know, that just gives you the risk descriptions and the risk scores, you know, just as an overall, which we've got the detail for each risk, maybe a summary report that just sets out really the 12 or 13 corporate risks so that you can get an overview of them.
Yeah, we
can
do that.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, members. So, members, so we note Doreen, the corporate risk register. Okay, do you need a proposal in a second? No. Item 9, members, prompt payments. Ken?
Thank you, Chair. The report in front of you shows the prompt payments for the quarter ended the 30th of June 2018. What we show there is the total amount paid by the council to suppliers over that period, and the value during that period was £16,316,551. Sorry, £17,745,608. The number of invoices paid within 10 days was 9%, and the value was £1,957,483. The number of invoices paid within 30 calendar days was 16,316,551, representing 90% of the total. That, I think, is a slight increase on last year, on the last quarter, which was around in the high 80s, and is showing that we are going in the right direction. The number of paid invoices outside the 30 calendar days was 649, representing 10% of the value of at
£1,429,057. Happy to take any questions. Okay, thanks for that, Ken. Members, any questions, comments?
Councillor Byrne? Yeah, I have a question on what target. I know the policy is not binding for 90% payments within 10 days. I'm just trying to think of, you know, and business itself, and listen, we practice with a breach here because I get them all in 30 days. But some businesses are reliant on them paid promptly. What is our target? We're sitting at 9% within the 10 days. Do we have the figure that we're trying to get there? And it's great that there's 90% within the 30 days. But what's our target for the first 10 days, if any?
The central government have a target to pay 90% of invoices within 10 days. The Department for Communities issue a circular to local government bodies saying that we should aim to do that as well, but we don't have it as a hard target the way central government bodies do. So technically we should all be working towards getting there as a good practice point. That said, the contracts which we give out as a council are we stayed in that contract, and you enter into a contract with this council on the understanding that you'll be paid within 30 days. So that's our contractual obligation, and also then the legislation, the late payment of commercial debt legislation, is based around a 30-day procedure. So the 10 days is something of a best practice point, something that we should aim towards. 30 days is a legal and contractual obligation.
Suppose, Chair. So the point is we don't have a target, because if you're going between, say, 10%, and I totally understand if it's the policy of the council to pay within 30 days, and that's what we're looking at, and this 90% of paying invoices within 10 days is something that, well, let's call it what it is, left in the clouds at the minute, you know, because there's no way that you can move from 10%. So what I'm asking is, we don't have somewhere that we're going to be sitting here next year and say, well, listen, we've got the 20% within 10 days. We're happy to just keep our own policy of paying legally what we're required to under 30 days. So we're not really... This is only for information. I know it's not binding, it's not mandatory, but it's not something that we're taking on board in the council to move from the 10 to the 90. Because what I'm saying is there's a big gap there.
Yeah.
There is no attempt to try and close that gap. Are we looking at next year, let's have 30% of invoices payable in 10 days, or is this something that we're just happy that if 90% or more is below the 30, which would be totally acceptable, but just so we know for scrutinising it next year that we're not really... focusing on this figure, we're not relying too much on the 10% figure or the 10-day figure.
My aim has always been really to focus, and my focus has been on the 30 days. That said, I don't disregard the 10 days. I think we're always striving, and especially just cognizant of the small businesses out there who are experiencing cash flow difficulties in the current economic environment. We are always striving to do that as quickly. That said, with the current staffing complement and the current systems that we have in place in council, it would take an awful lot of additional resources, really, for us to do that. So we are trying to streamline processes. We do think we will get better as things go, but certainly the focus, I wouldn't say we're not focused on it, but the primary focus has been on the 30 days.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Items outside the payment period, the 10%.
What's the reasons for that? Just to give me a sort of understand, and how are we improving that? Is it, could it be simple things like bank details, or what's the reasons?
It could be several factors. It could be that we have queried the invoice. That it doesn't match with the order, that the officer that authorises it could be on holidays. It takes 3 or 4 days for it to receive the invoice coming in. So there could be several factors as to why they're not paid, but they will eventually be paid. The average time taken to process an invoice is 22 days on average. 20 days. 20 days.
Mm-hmm. Okay, members. We'll move on to item 10, fraud and whistleblowing updates. And Jared, you're going to take us through this one.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. So just a quick update. There's been no new suspected fraud cases since the last committee in July. However, there is one new whistleblowing case which is ongoing, and since the last committee, one whistleblowing case is closed, so the details is in the appendix. I'd just like to highlight then that the 2018 NFI exercise is commencing in the coming weeks, and we'll be expected to upload our data in October 2018. So a privacy notice is going to be included in all council payslips in September 2018. A chief executive brief will be sent out by email next week to all staff, just detailing that the personal information is going to be shared in relation to the National Fraud Initiative exercise. And finally, the conflict of interest policy, which is highlighted in the action sheet, it's attached as one of the appendix, both the policy and the procedure. The policy was developed out of a priority one internal audit recommendation in the strategic program unit audit. So it was approved in the August SPNR committee and then ratified at council in September. Thanks.
Okay, members, any questions, comments? No. Jared, if I could just welcome the conflict of interest policy. I thought it was a very good, well-written policy. Certainly, again, very, very easy to read. So thanks for that. Members, we'll move on to item 11, which is the direct award contracts.
Thank you, Chair. This is just to bring your attention. In the second quarter of the 2018 financial year, the Council awarded 20 contracts by way of direct award, and the total value of these contracts was $202,000. So the appendix shows a list of the 20 contracts. So if anyone has any questions on the individual contracts.
Thanks, Mr. Byrne.
Yeah, and just before I question one of them, I think it was at the start. It might be something simple, but it's a nightmare to read. See when the lines were taken out of it? I couldn't match which reason was provided for which one, because it's just all blurred into one. I mean, on the first page was easy enough on the minipad, and then it sort of just all jumbled up. So I was taking reasons for ones that weren't for it. But the cleaning of the public convenience in Newcastle, it comes up in September and August, and I just want to know the reason why that was directly awarded and it didn't go to tender.
Yes, I only noticed in the papers myself, so it's quite hard to read. But I think in relation to the Newcastle one, I think it got a lot of social media attention at that time. At the time of the good weather, we didn't have the staff to do it ourselves, so that's why it was issued by direct award. And there was, from reading the single tender action sheet, I think there was an event in Newcastle around that time, and it had to be done imminently. So they're carried out by direct award.
Chairman, it was done in conjunction with myself. The issue was that the numbers, because of the good weather, the number of people in Newcastle, actually in the evening time, couldn't drive them in terms of the parks. It meant that really that was the level of, you know, we didn't have the resources at that point in time because of the number of visitors into the area. And I think it was because of the level of social media attention we were getting, it was of an adverse impact. So I instructed the officers to get additional resources onto the ground to actually facilitate, help our own officers in terms of tackling the issues over litter and gathering out there, and also in terms of public toilets within the area. So again, it's probably our tourism numbers increase. Mm-hmm. The problem is you don't keep up with the pace with it, then it can have a negative impact on you, and that was the rationale behind it. It was during the summer period, we didn't have the time to deal with it, and the time you go out and get a tender and people in onto it, it would have just, the summer season would have been over.
Just a follow-up question, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Most of the other items, I understand their speciality when you're talking about the festivals and, you know, the people that you're going to get, but see on the Newcastle one, and I know the social media attention now that you're talking about, it's only after clicking with me, and I understand that coming out in August. I wouldn't expect to see it coming up in September then again. I would expect, you know, that in that moment where we needed to go out and get a direct contact for cleaning of Newcastle, that would be right on the ball for the following month. Now I understand it's still the summer period, and maybe August and September can be taken as the emergency period, but surely I wouldn't like to see it coming up with the next audit committee where we still have direct contract for somebody because they've done it during the summer. We would have to go out the tender between now and then. So I just thought it was, for me, it was a bit iffy to see it coming up in the next month, that it was directly awarded for the next month. So
again, Chairman, it's something for the future we need to plan for. You can be caught once, but you shouldn't be caught again.
And
I think we need to do that. And members will know the stuff we're doing around neighbourhood services, again, is very much about that there. It's about how we actually take a neighbourhood approach on it.
Okay. Thanks for that, Liam. Councillor Clark?
Just so I'm aware of the Newcastle stuff as well, because I did highlight it to the officers at the time, and there had to be an immediate response. The officers had been out for recruitment and had failed to recruit. So this was the only option because of the negative publicity that the council was receiving, and especially in regards of if we're looking to make our council area, you know, the number one tourist attraction in Ireland, you can't have this negative comments. But I agree that the staff need to be in place over the summer months, particularly over the summer months. This was, in around the bank holiday as well. It just had to be carried out immediately.
Okay, thanks for that. Councillor Clark, Councillor Mulgrew? No? No? Oh, yes.
Yeah, can I just ask about
I did read the STAs to put in the description, but I think it was outside our insurance that we have currently for the policy, and possibly this is the only one we could get for the fit for the claims.
Yeah. We've had to pay additional insurance for this festival each year, because we get a quote in from our insurance company. Then the risk of this particular festival is deemed so high that they advise on an additional level of insurance. And so we pay that out each year on top of our own total council public liability insurance, take out an additional one for this one festival. Do you think cancellations are covered?
Okay, thanks for that, Councillor McGrew. Any other questions on the direct award contracts? Okay, thanks for that. Item 12, update on audit recommendations.
Thank you, Chair. So, from the tables you can see, the internal audit recommendations from 15-16 have been well progressed. There's only three outstanding and they're partially implemented. They all relate to off-street car parking. There's an agreement in place to transport NI to 2022, so they will remain partially implemented until that period. In relation to the 2016-17 internal audit recommendations, progress probably isn't as speedily as we think it should be, so I'm going to bring the report to CMT, the next CMT meeting, and highlight that actions need to be implemented. And I'll do a full review in November, December, and bring a report back in January, and hopefully there'll be more progress. The only other thing to note was the 2017-18 internal audit in relation to the Strategic Programs Unit. ASM carried out a follow-up, and we're happy with the action on the recommendations to move it from a limited to a satisfactory assurance level, and this has been highlighted in the annual governance statement and the accounts. Thanks.
Okay, members. Chair, could I just ask on that audit? Will that come to the next? Will that internal audit report come to the next audit committee? The just that last paragraph where it's strategic program unit where it's been moved from limited to satisfactory.
It'll just be like a mini follow up to the audit at the year end.
It will be reported. Right. Yeah. Oh, that's good. Thanks for that. Members, any questions, comments? Councillor Byrne?
Yeah, very brief question. It's just because I don't understand the scenarios when you would have to take it out manually. Why in the finance system, the Sun finance system, that you're talking about all the payments should go through, why are some taken manually and recorded in Excel sheets or whatever? Again, why is the reason that some are taken manually?
On a weekly basis, there is what is called the manual payments, where on a Wednesday, where payments to refunds for certain things that cannot go through the accounts payable system to people who are not recorded on the eHub system, those manual payments are processed on a weekly basis.
That raises the question then, because it's down here as recommended that all income received will go through that finance system. So is it envisaged going forward that the manual payments will be phased out, or the manual recording of payments will be phased out? And even if people aren't on the eHub system, that there is a general heading on the eHub system for other payments, that it all goes through. Is that the idea going forward?
All manual payments do go through the finance system. It's just a terminology we have for them that they are manual payments.
Okay.
In that, there are checks written once a week for these kind of
through either emergency payments or routine refunds, things like that.
So it eventually goes into, yeah, oh, it eventually goes through the system.
Okay, thanks for that, Brenda. Okay, members, we'll go to item 13, which is update on procurement. And Chair, you're going to take us.
Thank you, Chair. So, as you know, we have a policy and procedures in place. The policy was amended again in August 2018 based on the first stage of internal audit procurement report. Currently, ASM are in doing fieldwork at the minute. So it's stage two of our procurement internal audit, and this is focusing on the council's compliance with the new policy and procedures since the policy came in. Training has now been delivered to all staff who deal with procurement by Florence Craig, and members received their training on the 22nd of August 2018. However, the training sessions which were delivered by Florence, the sessions were oversubscribed. So there was a meeting 2-3 weeks ago, and we came up with a new training schedule for procurement. So there's going to be 6 separate sessions, and these include the overview of the procurement policy, the use of the eHub system and creating purchase orders, how officers can obtain value for money for orders with a value of less than £5,000, the request for a quotation process, how to develop a business case and specification, and the invitation to tender process, how to develop a business case and specification, and finally, how to evaluate submissions. So these training sessions are scheduled to commence in mid-October and will be delivered mainly in-house, and they're mainly going to be practical sessions and will last anywhere between 1 to 2 hours. Thanks. If anyone has any questions.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Okay, members. Thanks for that, Chair, and just to welcome the training. I think that's key to improving procedures and practice. Thank you. Item 14 is the local government auditor's report findings. Andrea, you're going to
take item. Members, it's just a highlight to you. The local government auditor, Pamela McCready, has published her annual report, which summarises her key findings across the 11 councils. It's important to note that this relates to the audits that she carried out on the previous year's accounts, obviously. But I just thought it would be interesting to bring some of the report to the attention of the audit committee. You will see that at 1.2 that there are 5 recommendations highlighted within the report, and we have included as an appendix our assessment of where we are, and indeed you'll see that some of those recommendations really are for the department to take forward. So that's included at appendix 1. Item 2, what I've done is pull out some of the areas in the report and signpost you to areas that are of interest to you as an audit committee. And you will see there that the comments noted in relation to last year's governance statement, just thought it was interesting for you to see what our own governance statement in the context of what other councils are experiencing as well. So you'll see there that the local government auditor importantly noted that they were all comprehensive and of good quality, but there were common themes which around waste management, procurement and contract management, legal issues, ICT, fraud, and you'll also note that she identified weaknesses in a number of councils with regard to procurement, fixed asset recording and cash handling and income recording. So it's really just to give you a bit of context of our own position against others. At 2.2, then I've just highlighted for you the local government auditor's comments in respect of what she believes constitutes an effective audit committee. And certainly members, when you review ours in line with what the local government auditor sets out, certainly I would be satisfied that this committee is acting in accordance with the effectiveness demonstrated. We've noted the prompt payment performance of this council, and again, you can see that compared with others. Importantly, the local government auditor notes that there is considerable scope for councils to improve, and that's something that we would acknowledge. Again, there are comments made at 2.4 highlighted for you with regard to the performance improvement audit, which comes up later on our agenda, and you'll see it is noted that this is very much something which is evolving, and there's further work required there as that whole new performance audit approach embeds and takes shape. A 2.5 then, I've really summarised it. Part 2 of the Local Government Auditor's Report really goes into a lot of detail about good governance, the importance of managing conflicts of interest, of looking at members' interests, the importance of whistleblowing, of reporting fraud, and of identifying NFI. And hopefully, committee members, you'll be aware this is an area that we have, and the Audit Committee will have seen we've invested a lot of time and a lot of investment in policy and practice and training in all of these areas. And it's just lastly to say, part 3 of the Local Government Auditor's Report focuses a lot then on service delivery and a lot on the efficiency agenda. I haven't gone into any detail for the purposes of this committee, but just to highlight, I will take members through those areas and the comparisons made when we get into the efficiency working group and the rate setting process, because some of the comparisons made and again some of the context of us as a council versus other councils is quite interesting for you to see, but probably not so much for this committee. So really just highlighting for you today, members, you've got a copy of the full report there in your packs. It is quite an interesting read in terms of setting ourselves in the context of other councils. And happy to take any questions or comments, and obviously we've collect here if you have any questions for the Audit Office as well.
Okay, members? No? Just a thank you, Serena, for setting out that report. You know, like I say, it was useful. The report itself was very, very useful, you know, as you say, to compare against other councils, but I think it's also very, very useful to have a report on it, you know, particularly setting out really where New Moreland and Down sits in relation to the report, so thanks for that. Item 15, members, is the assessment of performance for 2017-18, and I think, Chair, you're going to take this report in the absence of Jeremy.
Okay, so the Council has a statutory requirement to reduce and publish an assessment of performance before the 30th of September each year. The assessment of performance 17-18 is attached to Appendix 1, and this was considered in detail at SPNR on the 13th of September 18. I don't plan on getting into any detail on it. If anyone has any questions, I can bring them back to Johnny and get a response.
Okay, members
have probably seen this report. This is the same report that was tabled in front of SPNR, so it's just a free practice then for the Audit Committee to also have sight of it.
Okay, members content to note? Yeah, and move on. Thanks, members. So that brings us to the end of our open session. So could I have a proposer and seconder to go back into closed session? Proposed, Councillor McGrew. Second, Councillor Byrne. Items 16 and 17 are deemed to be exempt on the paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act, Northern Ireland 2014. Information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information, and the public may by resolution be excluded during this item of business.
Margaret, a second.
Okay, so whilst in closed session, the following items were considered. Item 16, tender for the internal audit contract, agreed on the proposal of Councillor Mulgrew, seconded by Councillor Byrne, to recommend that members approve a business case to be presented to the SPNR committee in November 18, deciding how the internal audit function should be staffed in Newry, Mourne and Down District Council. The result of the business case and any associated actions will be brought back to the January 2019 Audit Committee. And then item 17, recruitment of an independent audit committee chairperson. It was agreed on the proposal of Councillor Rann, seconded by Councillor Mulgrew, to approve the extension of Mr Campbell's appointment to facilitate the continuation of his chairmanship at the audit committee meeting of April 19th. And it was also agreed to authorise officers to commence the recruitment process for an independent chairperson of the audit committee to commence with a new term of council for a 4-year period, with the first meeting being July 19th.
Yep, thanks, Lynn. That's awesome.